favorite verses in the whole Bible. It's Ephesians chapter 5. If you're taking notes, write it down. Ephesians chapter 5, it says, "Awake, O sleeper." You see right there, God is saying, hey, wake up. God is telling you and me, we need to wake up. We need to be present. We need to be aware. We need to wake up and be present in our relationship with God. We need to wake up and be present in our relationship with our parents. We need to wake up and be present in our schoolwork. Because some of you guys be daydreaming in school. You know what I'm saying? The second that bell rings, you're like, boom, in another world. Anybody? You feel me? Don't even lie. I know you guys, okay? You see, God is saying, wake up. We need to be present. Why? Because there are opportunities in front of you, in front of me, and if we are not awake, if we are just sleepwalking through this life, we're going to miss it. You see, I want our generation to be different. I'm not that old, so don't think. Don't be thinking nothing, okay? We're still in the same boat here, okay? I'm not like 40. I'm just mature. No, okay. You see, I want our generation to be different. I want our generation to shake this world with the love of Christ. But we can't do that if we're asleep. We can't change people's lives. We can't change our own households. We can't become better if we are not paying attention. And God is telling us to wake up. You see, oftentimes we don't embrace the present because we don't like it. We don't embrace the present because we're not happy with our situation. We don't embrace the relationships in our life because we don't like them. Maybe your parents, you are not on good terms with your parents. Maybe your dad was never there. Maybe your mom was never there. And you say, well, it's better if I just don't think about it. Maybe you and your mom, you fight all the time, or you and your sister, you fight all the time. And instead of trying to do something to make it better, you say, I'll just zone out. And I won't think about it. I'll just numb myself with hours of TV. I'll just numb myself with hours of playing video games. Then I won't have to deal with it. But God is saying we need to wake up and deal with these things. So, today we're going to be talking about how to avoid the failure to launch. How to avoid from failing to take that next step in our life. You guys ready? You guys awake? Yes? Okay then. Number one, we need to seize the opportunities right in front of us. Seize the opportunities right in front of you. You see, if we keep reading in Ephesians 5:16, it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. So be careful how you live, and don't live like those fools, but live like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days." See, right there, he makes a clear statement. He says, in these evil days. That means God knows your situation isn't how you want it to be. God knows that the relationships that are in your life aren't exactly how you wish they would. You see, God knows and God understands that this world is full of chaos. This world is full of things that we wish weren't here. But that doesn't excuse us from being present. He says, make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. Make the most of it. If I could just quote the very theological Kung Fu Panda. The interns know this because I say it all the time. It's on my walls. It's on my cup. It says, yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. But today is a gift. That's why they call it the present. You see, yesterday is history. You can't do anything about it. Tomorrow is a mystery. Who knows what's going to bring tomorrow? But today, I can do something about today. I can change my world today. I can change and make good choices for my life today. You see, this is the present. God is calling us to seize the opportunities right in front of us. You see, there are two types of regrets. Regret number one. This is one we often have a lot. Regret number one is regret of action. This is wishing you hadn't done something. Anybody wish there's things you could take back? Everyone's hand should be like, boom, okay? I have the biggest mouth ever, okay? And when I get sarcastic, oh, Lord, there is no stopping me, okay? And I can think of so many times, I wish I would have said that. I regret that I did that. I regret the way I treated this person or the way I spoke to this person or what I said about this person's back. You have a regret of action. But the second regret is a regret of inaction. This is wishing you had done something. This is when you're at school and you see that student and you know they're depressed. You know that that kid is quiet into themselves, and you know they just are looking every day more and more sad. And you're saying, I just want to tell them something. I just want to ask them how they're doing, but you don't, and you regret it later. It's when, you know, you get up in the morning and God does a miracle because you're ready 10 minutes early. You don't know how it happened, but it happened. And so you have this 10 minutes. You're thinking, what do I do with this 10 minutes? There's so much. I could watch Netflix. I could play video games. I could just sit here and zone out and then come back. Or I could spend it with God. And then you don't. And later, you regret it. It's when you wish you had done something. Can I just say my opinion? I think that God sometimes is more concerned with the things we should have done than with the things we did do. I think God is more concerned when there is an opportunity in front of us to reach somebody else, when there is an opportunity in front of us to become something better and we didn't take it. You see, that's a regret. And we shouldn't get to the end of our lives saying, gosh, there was so much I should have done. There was so much I could have done, but I was just so lazy. But I was so selfish, but I didn't want to do it. You see, in Matthew, there's a man who deals with the exact same thing. In Matthew chapter 19, go ahead and turn there. Matthew chapter 19, there was this young man, and he was a Bible scholar. He knew about the Bible. He didn't need anyone to tell him anything, but he comes to Jesus and he asks him a very important question. It says in chapter 19, verse 16, someone came to Jesus with this question, teacher, what good deed must I do to have eternal life? He said, why ask about what is good? Jesus replied, the only one who is good is God. But to answer your question, if you receive the eternal life, keep the commandments. It's simple. This guy, he knew the commandments. He knew all about the Bible. He comes to Jesus. Jesus, how do I become saved? How do I get into heaven? Jesus says, just follow the commandments. Obviously, that answer wasn't good enough because he keeps asking. He says, which ones? And Jesus says, you must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not testify falsely. Honor your father and mother. Love your neighbor as yourself. And this young man, he just doesn't get it. He says, but wait a second, I've obeyed all these commandments. Jesus, what are you talking about? I've done all this. I know all this. He's a lot like you and me. We know the church. We've been in church. We know what to do and what not to do. We know what's wrong and we know what's right. But then he says something at the end. He says, I know all this, but what else must I do? Jesus, I don't get it. I do all these things, but there's something on the inside of me that I'm just still not fulfilled. Jesus, I know what's wrong, what's right, and I've been doing that since I was young, but there's still something on the inside of me that isn't clicking. And then later Jesus says, okay, it's because you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything with what you know. You're not doing with anything with all the commandments that you know. You're not doing anything with what you come into this church and you hear week after week after week. You're not doing anything with it. He says, okay, you want to know, then you go and you sell everything you have and you give it to the poor. You see, Jesus tells him to take action. Jesus tells him to seize the opportunity. Jesus says, okay, just knowing what's right isn't going to be good enough. You got to do something. Some of you in this room, you say, why does the preacher get so excited? I just don't get it. Why do the people at the front of the altar and the people on the stage, they get so pumped up, they start jumping, they start singing. I don't get that excited. Why not? I'll tell you why. Because you're still on the sidelines. You're still on the sidelines. You're not in the game yet. You're still on the side and you're hearing everything at church and you're kind of watching everybody, but you're not doing anything. You're not seizing the opportunities. It's when you get in the game. It's when you start doing stuff. It's when you start blessing people. It's when you start ministering to that kid at school. It's when you start being nice to your mom or praying for a friend. That's when something starts happening on the inside of you. Because doing nothing wrong just isn't good enough. Jesus is saying we have to seize the opportunities in front of us. We have to do something. I came across this quote the other day that just like threw me through a loop. It's by Thomas Edison. It says, vision without execution is hallucination. To have a vision, to have a dream. Some of you say, I wanna open up this rehab. I wanna go and I wanna start my own business. I wanna do this and I wanna do that. But if you're not doing anything, can I tell you something? You're just hallucinating. You're saying, I want to minister to people. God, I want to be used. And then when that opportunity comes, when that person who's sick comes, when that person who's all by themselves at lunch and has no friends is sitting there, you say, oh, never mind, God. Not me. Someone else. Not me. See, vision without execution is just hallucination. So number two, how to avoid the failure to launch. We need to defy the odds. We need to defy the odds. Some of you in this room, you feel like the odds are all stacked against you. You know, I just talked to a young man today, and I was talking with him, and he was so down on himself because he was under so much pressure. He said, I'm the first in my family to graduate high school, and I'm the first in my family to begin college. And he had so much pressure on him because he was the first. Because he wasn't going to be like his other family members. He wasn't going to give up. He wasn't just going to stop at high school. He said, no, 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 I'm going to go to university. I'm going to graduate. You see, some of you in this room, you have all the excuses in the world. You say, this is wrong with my life. This is wrong with my life. And you feel like the odds are stacked against you. And you feel like God can't use you. You feel like there's nothing that you can really do because it's all going to fall down on you. But there's a man in 2 Samuel. You guys can turn there. 2 Samuel chapter 23. The odds are stacked against him. Let's see what he does. And 2 Samuel chapter 23, if you guys are here at camp last year, I'm super excited. Camp's coming up in just a couple months. But last year, I talked about this verse for like 5 minutes. I don't even think I read you guys the verse. It was just so crazy. But in chapter 23, there's a man by the name of Benaniah. And basically, what it begins to do is go through all these incredible things he's done with his life. In chapter 23, verse 20. It says, here's Benaniah, and he did many heroic deeds, which included killing two champions of Moab. Another time on a snowy day, he chased the lion down into a pit, and he killed it. Once armed with only a club, he killed a great Egyptian warrior who was armed with a spear. Benaniah wrenched it out of his arms and killed him with it. You see, he began to go through all these crazy things this guy does, but there's one story in there that just doesn't make sense. There's one story in there that I just think, what on earth? Why would that happen? It says on a snowy day, a day where it was cold, a day where snow was falling, a day where you couldn't really see that well. On a snowy day, he chased the lion into a pit and he killed it. Number one, who's ever heard of a lion chaser? Okay, I've heard of lion tamers, I've seen the circus, I know that deal, you know, this and that, but a lion, why would you chase a lion? That just doesn't make sense to me. In fact, any normal person who sees a lion coming their way, what do? They run. But you see, lion chasers aren't normal. Me and you, we're not designed to be normal. Instead, Benaniah went after the lion. You got to understand something. Benaniah was at a physical disadvantage. You see, any grown lion, full-grown lion, would be up to hundreds of pounds more than any human. Right? The lion would run faster, jump farther. The lion has up to 5 times better eyesight than any human with 20/20 vision. The lion's jaws are designed to break through any human skull and to rip through any animal hide. You see, he has a physical disadvantage. And if you can imagine, Benani, he's chasing this lion. He goes into the pit, and there he is. He's looking over the pit, and inside this dark pit is the lion. And he begins to walk away. And you think he's walking away, but instead he's just getting a running start. And he jumps inside, and it's pitch black, and it's dark. And all he can hear is the growl of the lion. He can smell the blood on its breath. And now it's just him and the lion. You see, the odds were stacked against him. But he defeated the lion. But he killed the lion. You see, we are called to defy the odds. Some of you in this room, you're saying, I'm just like that boy. No one in my family has graduated from college. No one in my family, you see, no one in my family has ever had their own business. All my family members, they live off the government. Everyone in my family, they're all jacked up and they don't have good relationships. And you're saying, there's too many odds against me, Beth. I just can't do it. How is God going to help me with this? But you and me, we are called to defy the odds. No matter what is in your life, no matter what seems so big, God is saying, no, we're called to defy that. You see, this is the key, is that Benaniah didn't focus on his disadvantages. He knew that God was for him. He knew that if he went in that pit, he would be the one coming out because he knew his God would protect him. He didn't run from anything. He didn't make excuses. Too many times you and me, when the odds are against us, when things look big in our life, we begin to make excuses because we think that will get us out of it. But instead, God is calling us to move past that. And he didn't try to avoid the situations where the odds were against him. You see, too often I think that our prayers revolve around God asking God to reduce the odds in our life. We say, God, if you would just take this away. God, if you would just take that girl away because she began my nerves. I'm about to break her neck. And we begin to ask God to make things easier for us. But maybe God allows the odds to be stacked against us so that we can experience a miracle of divine proportions. You see, when the odds are stacked against us, it sets the stage for only God to come through. Where the problem is too big, the issue is too big that it could only be God. You see, maybe faith is trusting God no matter how impossible the situations are. Maybe this faith we talk about every week, maybe this faith is trusting God even when the situations seem impossible. You see, many of our prayers, we ask for comfort instead of character. We pray for an easy way out instead of strength to make it through. But you see, Benaniah, he didn't pray for a way out. In fact, he jumped inside a pit with the lion on purpose because he knew that this opportunity would change the rest of his life. You got to understand something. When he defeated that lion, that opened up the door for him to be with King David, who helped bring the kingdom of God. You see, the scariest moment of his life was the best moment of his life. Some of you are facing some situations. You're looking at this summer. You're looking at things that you need to do. You're feeling like there's a step in your life God is calling you to take. Maybe it's the better relationship with a family member. You say, Beth, no. My dad doesn't want to get to know me anymore. No, Beth, I'm going to this big university. I'm going to this mission organization. I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to get a job. I'm going to be stressed out. And it's looking big. But the scariest moments of your life can be the best when we let God have his hand in it. Turn to Romans 8:30. This is an encouraging verse of why we can defy the odds. It says, and having chosen them, he called them to come to him. Talking about us. And having called them, he gave them right standing with himself. Talking about Jesus. And having given them right standing, he gave them his glory. What shall we say about such wonderful things as these? If God is for us, then who could ever be against us? You see, if God is on your side, if God is the one who is orchestrating your life, which he is, then nothing is too big. And I know the odds seem scary. And I know your next season in life may seem scary. I know that things aren't looking good here or there. But God is saying, if you would just trust me, if you would keep going, if you would pray for strength to make it through instead of praying for me to make everything disappear, because he's not going to do that. Because then it would steal the opportunity to see God move in a way that you've never seen before. He would rob us of our greatest opportunity if he did that. You ever hear the saying, no guts, no glory? No guts, no glory. You see, we got to get some guts because otherwise God does not get the glory. We got to get some guts and we got to move through these situations, not around them, not run from them, not run from the lions in our life, but we got to go right towards them so that God can get the glory. So number two. We just talked about defying the odds. And number three, my favorite, overcoming the fears. You see, we have to overcome our fears. In Luke 22, we're going to read about Peter. And if you know anything about Peter, you know, Peter was hilarious, okay? Peter was like, oh my gosh. I feel like if I was in the Bible, I would be Peter. He was like always getting into trouble. One time he cut off this guy's ear. I mean, that's a pretty big mistake for being a follower of Jesus. So he was just like, if he was a youth worker, he would have been kicked out for sure. You know, he was the worst. And here he is, and he's with Jesus. And Jesus, this is before he gets betrayed and goes to the cross. And Simon Peter, he gets himself into trouble yet again. It says, Jesus is speaking. He says, Simon, Simon, speaking of Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat, but I have pleaded in you for prayer. Simon, that your faith should not fail. So when you have repented and turned to me again, strengthen your brothers. Peter said, Lord, I'm ready to go with you in prison, even to die with you. But Jesus said, Peter, let me tell you something. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you have denied me three times. So Peter is here, and he's talking, and he's saying, Jesus, I'm your homeboy. I ain't going nowhere. If you go to prison, I'll be with you. If you die, I'll be with you. Actually, he said, I'll be with you, okay? And Jesus says, oh, Peter, seriously again. He says, you know what, Peter? By the time the rooster crows tomorrow, you will have denied me three times. And Peter's in shock. He's like, what? No way. Later that night, Jesus is praying at the garden, and these soldiers come in. They arrest Peter, and they take him away. And as they're taking him away, we pick it up in verse 54. So they arrested him and led him to the high priest's home, and Peter followed at a distance. Now, you got to understand something. Peter is a disciple. That means for years now, he's been with Jesus every day. For years now, he's been ministering with Jesus on miracle after miracle. That'd be like if, like, we all just hung out for, like, 3 years. Boom, we're, like, all best friends. Okay, like, he is his friend. He is his disciple. This is his Savior. He left everything in his life to follow Jesus. And now it says that Jesus is arrested, being led to be crucified, and Peter is following at a distance. The guards lit a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat around it, and Peter joined them there. A servant girl noticed him in the firelight and began staring at him. Finally, she said, this is the man who is one of Jesus' followers. But Peter denied it. Woman, I don't even know you. That's denial number one. Then it says, after a while, someone looked at him and said, you must be one of them. No, I'm not, Peter retorted. About an hour later, someone else insisted, this must be one of them because he's a Galilean too. But Peter said, I don't know what you're talking about. And immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. He denied him three times. Then the rooster crowed. And it says Jesus was standing there and he looked at him. First of all, if any of my friends are going to deny that they know me in front of me, they got nothing coming. Are you kidding me? Like, right? I mean, some of you guys have denied your friends though. I know. I've done it. I'm like, we're not like friends. We're like acquaintances. You know what I'm saying? That's like a good way to do it. But here, Peter denies Jesus right in front of Jesus. And he looks at him. You see, Peter denied Jesus when Jesus needed him most. You got to understand this. He was being led away to be crucified, to die. and Peter denies him when he needed him most. And he heard that rooster crow. You see, Pavlov, how many of you guys have studied Ivan Pavlov? Anyone in your science class or anything? You know what I'm saying? Okay, right? Okay. Ivan Pavlov, he was a Russian scientist and physiologist, and he had this thing, he had this idea called the conditioned reflex. And what he did is he did this experiment, and he took this dog and he put some dog food down, and every time a dog would see dog food, they began to salivate. They begin to have saliva. Some of you are like that Chipotle. You're like, you see, and you're like at the window, like, oh my, just all over the place, okay? It gets ugly, I know. And they put it there, and the dog would begin to salivate, and he'd ring a bell. And the dog would hear the bell and salivate. Dog food. Bell, salivate, dog food. And soon, the dog would begin to have a conditioned reflex where every time he heard the bell, he would salivate. You see, his experiment got to the point that he took away the dog. He would only have to ring a bell, and the dog would begin to salivate. What I'm trying to say is that what he discovered is that we can be conditioned to our reflexes. That means certain stimuli can start memories in our life. Certain things can make us think of different things. I want you guys to imagine right now the smell of fresh baked cookies. Oh, Lord Jesus. And we have a cookie for everyone. I'm just kidding, we don't. That was mean. Think of fresh baked cookies. What does that remind you of? Pastor Michelle's cookies. That's right, because my sister makes the best cookies in the world. Yep. You know, there's certain songs that will just transport you somewhere else. Every time I hear Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls, oh, my Lord. You know what I'm saying? Oh, my goodness, I am transported back. I think I was like 2 years old when that came out. But I remember. Heard in the womb. It makes me think of my sisters and all their friends, and they'd be singing it and getting down to it, and even though I can't dance. You know, maybe some of you, you hear a certain song, and you just think of your first girlfriend. When you made that move, grabbed her hand, and it was crazy. You know what I'm saying? It got real crazy right then. There's certain stimuli that can make us think of certain things. I want you guys to take a look at this clip from The Office. Who's ever seen The Office? Oh, my Lord, so funny. Well, Jim decided to do an experiment on Dwight. Let's see what happened.
Another file. Gonna have to reboot again. Hey, Dwight, do you want an Altoid?
What do you think?
In school, we learned about this scientist who trained dogs to salivate at the sound of a bell by feeding them whenever a bell rang. So for the past couple weeks, I've been conducting a similar experiment. Dwight, want an Altoid?
Okay.
Altoid?
Sure.
And Dwight?
Vinpreet?
What are you doing?
I...
What?
I don't know. My mouth tastes so bad all of a sudden. Oh.
Love Jim. Who loves Jim? Oh my gosh. I love Jim. So, the point is that certain things can trigger things in our life. And I just have a question. Here, Peter, when he denied Jesus three times, he heard a rooster's crow. The moment that he was supposed to be there for Jesus, the moment that Jesus needed him most, he failed, and he heard that rooster's crow. And I guess my question tonight is, I wonder if every time Peter heard a rooster's crow after that, if he had a twinge of guilt. I wonder if every time he heard the rooster's crow, if it reminded him of the time he let Jesus down. If he reminded him of the time that he failed. I guess my question tonight is there any roosters in your life? Is there any things in your life, whenever you think about it, you just have that twinge of guilt. You remember when you failed. You remember when you're doing so good with God. And then all of a sudden, You remember you were doing so good with school, and then all of a sudden this happened. You remember you were doing so good with your family, with your mom, your dad, and all of a sudden something happened. You see, I lived in Uganda, Africa for about 6 months, and can I tell you what I woke up to every single morning? A rooster's crow. Like a choir of them. They're terrible. I just want to like shoot everyone. Okay? It was terrible. Every morning I heard the rooster's crow, and if you think about it, when Peter, when he was living, when he lived and where he lived, he would have woke up to a rooster crow every morning. It's like he had his own personal alarm clock set to 99.FAIL. I mean, think about it. Good morning. We got a cloudy day with a chance of failure today. You see, that rooster's crow would remind him when he let Jesus down. And there's things in your life when you think about it, you just have that fear. You say, I remember when I gave that presentation in class and I did so terrible. I never want to speak in front of anyone ever again. I remember I tried to reach out to my dad and he didn't want to hear it. I never want to do that again. I remember when I took this test and I wanted to do AP classes, but I just wasn't smart enough. Forget it. I'll never do it again. But we have to move forward even though we have those fears, even though those things are there to remind us. A couple weeks ago, I preached in the junior high. I talked about my ugly dog. His name was Rascal, and he was ugly. Like, I mean, ugly. Oh, my God, he was ugly. But we loved him because someone had to, okay? It was a ministry. No. So we had this dog, and we had these bonfires going on, and one day he had backed his little butt up into the fire, and he burned his butt. His tail was on fire. I mean, it was already this small. By the end of it, it was like this small, and it was crazy, and he put it out, and he was crying, and poor little guy. I didn't want to hug him, so I just kicked him. No, I'm just kidding. And can I tell you something? Rascal wouldn't go back to the fire. Because every time he went near the fire, he remembered when he got burned. Every time he would go near to the fire, he'd say, no, I don't want to go to that. It hurt last time. And some of you in this room, there are things that you've tried. There are things that you know God is calling you to do. Maybe the last time you tried to minister to someone else, you got embarrassed. The last time you tried to help someone else, they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to see. You say, okay, forget it. I won't do it anymore. Not again. But the thing about Peter is Jesus looked at him when he denied him. And I don't think he looked at him with judgment. I don't think he looked at him with bitterness. I don't think he looked at him with anger. I think he looked at him with forgiveness. Because after Jesus was crucified, he was buried, and he rose again. And Peter was out on the water, and Peter didn't know Jesus was alive. And he's out on the water, and he's fishing, and Jesus is on the shore, but he couldn't see him. And so he yelled out, hey, have you caught any fish yet? And Peter said, no, not yet. He said, well, throw your net to the other side. And when he did, he caught fish. And Peter said, wait a second, this happened before. This happened with Jesus. And he realizes that Jesus is on the shore, and he jumps in. He begins to swim. The others are on the boat, but he's swimming to Jesus. And he finally gets to the shore, and Jesus embraces him. You see, he forgave him. And the thing is that Peter didn't hide from Jesus. The last thing Peter did to Jesus before he went to the cross was deny him. That would be his last moments with Jesus. But when he saw him on the shore, he jumped in. And too many times you and me, we say, I'm just going to stay away. I'm not going to go near it again. I'm just going to do my own thing. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to deal with it. I'll just zone out and everything will be okay. But God is calling you to jump in the water and to swim towards him, to run to Jesus, to seize the moment, to quiet the roosters. Do you want to know what the most tragic thing in life is? It is someone whose God gets smaller and smaller with each passing day. It is someone whose God gets smaller and smaller. It's someone who you used to see God as so big. You used to see God as he could do anything. But now as each passing day goes, you see, well, God, I guess he can't do that. Well, I guess God, he couldn't heal this person. Well, he couldn't fix this in my life. He couldn't make me smarter. He couldn't make me this. And your God begins to get smaller and smaller. But you got to understand something. When your God gets bigger and bigger in your heart and in your life, the roosters get quieter and quieter. And the lions get smaller and smaller. When you begin to worship God and you begin to see him as big and see him as great, your God gets bigger and bigger. So in this room,